From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Nora Flaherty, bringing you the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, December 30th, 2020. The Maine Center for Disease Control reported nearly 590 COVID-19 cases today, and another person has died, bringing the pandemic's death toll in Maine to 334. But the number of vaccinations continues to rise as well. More than 19,000 Mainers have now received that shot intended to protect them from COVID-19. The Mills administration is extending the requirement that certain businesses close by 9 p.m. In a written release, Governor Janet Mills says Maine cannot afford to relax the rule as it waits to see the full impact of the holiday season on the rate of coronavirus transmission. She says the early closing time curbs late-night gatherings where people are more likely to lower their guard, and the requirement will continue until further notice. Maine's seven-day positivity rate has increased significantly over the past week, from 4.2 to 5.4%. As Maine schools plan for more remote and hybrid learning in the new year, more than 300 will be getting upgraded internet service.
We have about a third of them, a little bit more than a third of them, complete so far, with the goal of finishing the final two-thirds, hopefully by April vacation.
That's Jeff Latorno, Executive Director of Network Maine, a unit at the University of Maine, which provides high-speed internet service for Maine schools, libraries, and other public institutions. Letourneau says when the upgrades are complete, about 99% of Maine schools will have gigabyte capacity. He says that should mean a better transmission of remote classes.
If you're having breakup of the video or having difficulty with the teacher's voice breaking up, whatnot, it really distracts from the learning experience.
Letourneau says all 301 schools getting the upgrade formerly had speeds of 100 megabits per second or less, which he says is no longer adequate for how schools need to use their technology. Many students' ability to participate will still be limited by their own internet connections at home, and he says they were unable to upgrade a number of schools that are located on islands. The $625,000 project is 70% funded by a program of the Federal Communications Commission, with the other 30% covered by a school and library fund program administered by the Maine Public Utilities Commission. In weather tonight, snow inland, rain or sleet at the coast with up to 4 inches of accumulation in the north. Temperatures steady in the 20s and 30s. The federal government this morning published proposed new regulations for the East Coast lobster and crab fisheries that aim to reduce the risk that endangered North Atlantic right whales will become entangled in trap lines. The proposed rules and an accompanying environmental impact statement total more than 300 pages, and here to help us wade through the issues is Fred Bever. Fred, the basic principle here is that the ropes lobstermen use to haul their traps can harm whales, right?
Yes, the whales can become entangled in the ropes and traps, which cut them, get embedded in their flesh, slow them down, and ultimately can kill them. Scientists say that entanglements and ship strikes have reduced the whales' numbers to fewer than 400 on the planet.
And conservationists have been suing for better protections.
Yes, earlier this year, a judge ruled that the National Marine Fisheries Service was violating the Endangered Species Act. That was by allowing trap pot fishing in regulated waters. He later gave the feds until May to enact new rules, and today's proposals are a major step towards actual changes on the water. The basic idea is to have less rope in the water, less often, and to make that rope weaker. The goal is to reduce entanglement risk by 60%, and the feds are proposing several alternatives. For now, I'll stick to what the agency calls its preferred alternative. The intention grabber is to close off large areas of the ocean to all trap rope fishing in season when whales are considered likely to be around. That includes expanding existing closures off of Massachusetts, where the whales have been congregating to feed in recent years.
But we haven't had any closures near Maine.
Not yet, but the feds now propose closing off 967 square miles of ocean, about 30 miles off of our coast, from October through the end of January each year. The feds say that depending on which exact month it is, there are about 45 boats that fish in that zone. Now, those lobstermen probably won't like this, nor would those who could find their own territory more crowded when those boats move in to new fishing areas near them.
What else is on the table?
Well, there's something called trawling up. That's when lobstermen attach more traps to each vertical line that they put in the water. That means fewer lines that whales might need to navigate.
And Maine lobstermen have been looking at this for some time, right?
Yeah, that's right, Nora. State regulators and lobstermen have been working hard this year to agree on trawling up and other measures that make sense to them. They include using weaker rope or installing weak links in the rope to make it easier for whales to break through, and better gear marking so that when a whale is found entangled, you can tell where that happened. It's been tough work because the tides and the terrain, the underwater terrain where Maine's 3,000 some odd lobstermen drop their traps, varies really widely off the coast. And many of the lobstermen are deeply worried that their safety and livelihoods will be put at risk, and angry because they don't accept that there is a real risk of whales swimming so close to Maine.
But they have been preparing for this.
Yeah, and the federal proposal does appear to be roughly in line with what the industry was expecting. I spoke to John Druin. He's a Cutler lobsterman who's been following the process closely and participating. He says even with the possible seasonal closure, at first blush, their proposals could have been worse, but he's not expecting a collective sigh of relief from the lobstering community.
I think there are going to be a lot of fishermen. They don't put a lot of faith in government anyways and the people that are regulating stuff. So when you get the announcements from the Fed, when stuff finally comes out, if we get mailings or something like that and the guys read them, yeah, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to be shocked.
What about conservationists?
Good first step, way late, doesn't do nearly enough to avert the whale's extinction. Here's Erica Fuller of the Conservation Law Foundation.
We're concerned about the agency's reliance on weak rope. And we're concerned that it doesn't appear that they're going to take any emergency action before these measures are effective on the water. Unless I've just missed it, I don't see an implementation date, and that relies heavily on Mass and Maine implementing their own measures, which may have even a different implementation date.
And the conservationists are also complaining, Nora, that the rule is based on an outdated estimate of the whale's survival rate. Fuller says closures off Massachusetts should be bigger and longer than proposed, although, interestingly, she also wants to see more evidence that the proposed closure off Maine would have any effect at all.
So now a public comment clock starts ticking, right?
That's right. It ends on March 1st.
All right, reporter Fred Bever, thank you for reading this and going through it with us.
You're welcome, Maura. Thank you.
When the COVID-19 pandemic began, it shut down Maine's court system, creating a serious backlog of cases and some ethical issues. According to Maine's Supreme Judicial Court, about 9,200 criminal cases have been pending for more than 6 months. That's as compared to just 2,600 such cases at this time last year. Supreme Judicial Court Acting Chief Justice Andrew Mead has described the situation as staggering. I spoke with him today.
We are operating at full capacity as regards in-person proceedings right now. Every available judge, every available location is being pressed into service. We have two platforms for processing cases. One is in-person, and as I said, those resources are maxed out at present, and the other is by remote video, by Zoom. And that is being leveraged. It's increasing as we speak. We're getting better and better at it. But those are our only two methods of processing legal matters at the present time. And it's not enough. We have reached the reality check. We realize that we can barely hold on as opposed to digging into the backlogs.
As you go forward with hearing cases, and you know, maybe as the possibility of hearing more cases in person opens up, how will the courts decide which cases are heard first?
We have priority cases. We have a list of priority cases where people who are in danger of being hurt or abused or even killed, those cases come first. We also consider folks who have constitutional liberty interests at stake, people awaiting trials in jails. They're at the top of the list also. So the priority list cases come first. We would do them by age. The older ones would be addressed first, but it's going to be all hands on deck once we can get back to our normal operations. And I suspect that we will be able to do things even better than we did before the pandemic. We have leveraged video. We have leveraged every possible efficiency we can along the way. So we will be flogging the backlogs in the current lists once we are opened up to something that looks like normal.
There are some people who are currently being held without bail prior to trial, maybe because they've been denied bail or because they weren't able to pay bail. What happens to their right to a speedy trial? How long are they likely to be held? And is there any discussion about letting some of those people out while they await trial, given the situation?
For folks that are being held in lieu of bail, there is an effort afoot to avoid that in the first place. All of our judges are to consider the fact that if they hold a person in lieu of bail, they are committing them to a setting which is congregate housing, which by definition raises the risk of COVID. So we try to avoid that circumstance there. You inquire about speedy trial. That is a big question mark all across the country. They're being held for periods that may exceed what in the past has been deemed to be a limitation on a speedy trial. Test cases will come up to the courts and they will have to look at that in the context of the pandemic. And does that alter the analysis? And I cannot offer an opinion on that because it's quite likely that our court may address one or more of cases of that type. And we'll find out, I guess, perhaps when the United States Supreme Court hands something down.
We do have a vaccine now for COVID-19, but it's unlikely to be widely distributed in the next couple months at least. What are jury trials going to look like then in the new year? How are courthouses going to plan for social distancing and mask wearing and jury deliberations?
We, like everyone else, are hopeful that the vaccines will open things up sooner rather than later. We actually have encouraged the folks who make these decisions to consider court personnel, meaning marshals, clerks, and judges, to be frontline essential workers. That doesn't solve the problem for jurors or other folks who come in. I had hoped to have jury trials up and running by now. We did a couple of experimental trials in October. We discovered we can do them. But as the COVID crisis has worsened and we have ramped up our protective measures, we have looked down the road and don't think we can manage jury trials, at least through the first several months of 2021. And when I say jury trials, I'm talking about the criminal trials because they are enormously backlogged. There are folks with valid claims waiting to get into a civil jury trial, and those are waiting in line behind the criminal trials. All of this is deeply distressing to all of us and to anyone who is waiting. We're in the business of providing a forum for folks to reach peaceful resolutions of human conflict. And that's what we can't deliver right now simply because of the logistics. It is deeply frustrating.
Well, Acting Chief Justice Andrew Mead, thank you so much for speaking with me.
Thank you. It's a pleasure.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, you can go to mainepublic.org and join us tomorrow morning at 11 for Maine Calling. I'm Nora Flaherty.